Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Mary Ellen O'Connell, a professor of law and research professor of international dispute resolutions at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at Notre Dame. Previously, she was the vice president of the American Society of International Law, and her books include What is War? An Investigation in the Wake of 9/11, and The Power and Purpose of International Law, Insights from the Theory and Practice of Enforcement. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mary Ellen O'Connell.
Thank you very much.
And on this 17th anniversary of 9/11, President Trump went to the site in Pennsylvania where the plane that was on its way either to ram into the Capitol or the White House. He, of course, himself has a somewhat checkered history talking about 9/11 and exploiting it for personal gain. What was your sense of how he's handling this day? Because he did do some fist bumps, which seemed peculiar, if not inappropriate.
I would hope that the president, along with all Americans and all friends of the United States, would take this moment to think about these past 17 years and see where we are, see what lessons we learned from that day and whether we've really put them to the best use. I think everyone in this country who's thinking about 9/11, I know many of our friends and allies abroad, are thinking about the fact that we're also marking 17 years in Afghanistan. That was the immediate response to the 9/11 attacks, and we are still there with no end in sight. So the response on the day, perhaps understandable in the great emotion, the great demand that our president of that time, President Bush, take immediate and forceful action, but to replicate that decision in the face of contrary evidence that we did not respond effectively for a world of greater peace, for a world in which terrorism was held in greater check than it is today, where we're really addressing the current existential problems of climate change. Everyone in the East Coast of the U.S. knows about Florence and what damage that will do, slow-moving storms from climate change. We're instead of focusing on those kinds of problems, 17 years after 9/11, we're repeating the same mistakes year after year.
So could you make the case that Osama bin Laden goaded us into a trap in the sense that we created our own nemesis by verifying his crazy ideology, where he talked about the crusaders coming to defile our lands? Well, we did, you know, and even President Bush used the word crusade until he was told otherwise. We did send our armies into Islamic lands, and we're still there 17 years later.
I'm loath to give Osama bin Laden credit for anything, but I do see an American character trait that we should be working to improve. I don't really consider the origins of our reaction, our use of military force around the world, not just in the Middle East, but in so many other places where, for example, we're now carrying out drone strikes in many places in Africa, for example, far from Islamic lands. I think that character trait has been exacerbated as much by the end of the Cold War as by 9/11. In fact, I think the reason that we responded as we did on 9/11 and why we were not prepared more appropriately for what our intelligence services knew was a gathering, you know, continuing attempts from 1993 until 2001 by bin Laden and his organization to attack in the U.S. The U.S., after the end of the Cold War, the collapse of the Soviet Union, being the exceptional, the sole superpower, went to our heads. We drew a lesson then that it was our military prowess that got us to that unique and enviable position. But in fact, it was our commitment to the rule of law. It was our bright, shining beacon of human rights that led people in authoritarian countries to look to us and to want to emulate us. It was having a good defense didn't hurt, but that was not the triggering feature. And unfortunately, after the end of the Cold War, President Clinton in particular began this development of military force and responding with military force instead of looking to the world and creating a system of human rights and support for weak governments to create greater voice for people everywhere in the Middle East, in Africa, in Asia, in South America. Instead, we committed trillions and trillions into new weapons, into invasions of countries that had not attacked us, such as the former Yugoslavia, Iraq, Libya. The list goes on, and that's why we are where we are today, facing true existential problems of environment, poverty, economic disparity, violence of all kinds, instead of really having the kind of handle that our unique position should have led us to.
And the religious fundamentalism on the part of bin Laden and the distortion of a religion is not unique to Islam. And we have a constituency in this country that actually turns out to be President Trump's core support. And how do you fight religious extremism abroad if you're in bed with it at home?
Again, I think of that problem. I am myself a religious person. And I think the way that politicians have distorted, or I don't know what you would call bin Laden, somebody who also distorted religion, but individual leaders who are taking what are religions that teach peace. Christianity is fundamentally a peace religion, as my own faith, but in Islam, the goal is Dar es Salaam, to create the kingdom of peace. So these are fundamentally peaceful religions. So is Buddhism. So is Hinduism. Two huge, all the world's huge and great religions. But we are in love with technology that is leading to new weapons. We're putting a false faith in military force and weapons technology to keep us on top of the world, to actually displace our true religious beliefs. But, these kinds of individuals who exploit religion understand that people have a hunger for something greater, something transcendent. And so they combine this more materialistic idea of, if we get the drone, if we get the killer robot, if we get the nanotechnology, we will have an advantage, a material advantage over everyone else. And then you combine that with, and you are the chosen people to do this, to do these kinds of actions in the name of your faith. It's been a very powerful combination. And people from impoverished countries and so forth, I understand their draw to it. I don't understand why in this wealthy country of the United States, where our wealthy allies even more, somewhat removed from many of the factors that account for the rise of a President Trump in the United States, why are our very wealthy, comfortable Western European allies not speaking truth to power and saying that military force is acceptable in strict defense when absolutely necessary, but not as a tool for spreading hegemony around the world? That's as much of a disappointment in these last 17 years as everything else. But the great thing about religious people like me is that we do believe in hope. We do believe in redemption. We do believe we can, through persistence, through education, even in my case, I'm doing a lot of praying, that we get back into a sense of viewing our fellow man, our fellow person, with compassion, with generosity, and with a very different sense of how we make a future together.
Well, in theological terms, my understanding is that Christianity is unique in as much as it brought forth the idea of turning the other cheek.
It's true that it's why I'm a Christian, because I think it is extraordinarily peaceful, but I also find that anyone who believes in the power of love, in transcendent ideas, will look at another person and think first how they can be reconciled to them, not how they can use violence against them. So I think that core idea is true of all religions, and it's something that those of us who are religious have a real obligation to revert. But I'm speaking as in theological terms. My own real expertise is in international law, and that's where the United States has been extraordinarily counterproductive in its actions. We just heard a speech yesterday by the National Security Advisor, somebody who in print, in scholarly articles, has said that international law is nothing more than morality, that it's not real law. He wrote in an op-ed during the Clinton administration that it was perfectly fine to invade or to attack Yugoslavia over the Kosovo crisis because international law is an academic sham. This is a person of high leadership in this country undermining the very thing that ties the world together regardless of religion, and that's international law. And at the heart of international law is a clear, unmistakable prohibition on the use of military force of the kind that the Trump administration has been pursuing around the world, in Yemen, in Libya, in Pakistan, in Syria. It goes on and on. You don't even have to be religious or have any commitment to international law. You can look at strict utilitarian effectiveness grounds and say, this isn't working. Why do we keep repeating it? On this 9/11, if we are thinking how we can go forward and finally remedy the ongoing mistakes of 17 years, it's to put international law front and center in our foreign policy, and that probably means some personnel changes. In the Trump administration, which would be my best bet, I've never heard President Trump ever actually say the United States is committed to international law.
Well, there's a concern, and prior to your joining us on this program, Marilyn O'Connell, we were speaking with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was Chief of Staff to Colin Powell.
Yes, somebody I have great respect for.
Well, he's very concerned that as Mueller closes in on Trump, who, according to Woodward's book, is unhinged to begin with, that he may pull off a little wag the dog war. And, of course, Bolton is only too accommodating. He's been taking money from the MEC, which is this disgraceful group of Iranian exiles. It's a kind of a cult. Rudy Giuliani's been taking money from them. So there's also, along with this belligerent ideology of the neoconservatives, you also have plain old corruption.
Yeah, no, I mean, the reasons for going to war by governments, are often for these kinds of venal reasons. And it's if only Americans could understand more tangibly, you know, the people who experienced 9/11, those families know what the horror is of being attacked. And it's not just a simple thing. You know, it's not a video game to drop bombs, to shoot missiles, to send ground troops in to kill. We sent these major forces against ISIS, and there's been almost no reaction to the extraordinary loss of civilian life, exceptionally beyond what could ever be justified. Over 10,000 people in Mosul killed in the counter-ISIS operations. That is inexcusable. And now there's wag the dog. Are people really using that kind of an expression? Even critically, we shouldn't talk in those terms about attacking another country. Iran is a very populous country. It is a country in great need, And if we want to have a peaceful future, a non-nuclear Iran, President Obama and his Secretary of State, John Kerry, gave us the way, participation in a global compact to move Iran into a healthy economy and out of its interest in building a nuclear program. I can't think of anything more counterproductive. Ian, I mean, isn't not your view that it would be so transparent that the United States would be killing people in Iran for President Trump's own short-term political gain? Would that not outrage this country?
Well, just in closing, just about everybody I know is alarmed and feels that we're in the most existential crisis in the history of this republic with this reckless and dangerous leader, yet, what, 50-60% of the people don't vote. So I can't answer that question, I'm afraid.
That, to me, that will be a great test. Who comes out to vote in November, and will we begin to get our country back and get us back on track to the country that actually drafted the UN Charter with its prohibition on the use of military force? And yes, that would apply extremely clearly in the case of any attack on Iran. There is no right to use military force against Iran in current circumstances.
Well, Mary Ellen O'Connell, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you for the call and best wishes.
And again, I've been speaking with Mary Ellen O'Connell, who's a professor of law and research professor of international dispute resolutions at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at Notre Dame. Previously, she was the vice president of the American Society of International Law, and her books include What is War? An Investigation in the Wake of 9/11 and The Power and Purpose of International Law, Insights from the Theory and Practice of Enforcement. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back joined by two evangelical pastors who are campaigning against the elite evangelicals who are the enablers of President Trump and the Republicans.